Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the fifth quarter with Coach Johnson. Part of the JC Hawk Sports Network. Tune in tonight to hear news about the Tennessee Thunder and the USWFL. Listen live every week on Blog Talk Radio or catch our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and many others. Just type in JC Hawks Radio in the search box.
All right. Welcome to the fifth quarter, Coach Duncan. Glad to be on here tonight after week one of women's football kicked off in the two leagues. What a great weekend for football. Man, I'll tell you, a lot of places it wasn't as good as what we wanted, pouring down rain and the storms and all that sort of threw a wrench in a lot of stuff. But nevertheless, two leagues have week one under their belt. Before we get started, though, I do want to congratulate my nephew on he signed with Clay College Basketball Day with Milligan College here in the Tri-Cities area, local school. So he's really happy about that. My brother and his wife's really happy for him, and I wish him the best. You know, there's lots of kids that would love to play, and fortunately he's going to get an opportunity. Now, how much he plays, I know, is all on him, but he's at least going to get the opportunity. So congratulations to him. All right. Now, I know a lot of places that we watched football that it was raining and storming all over the country and the East Coast here for sure. The Thunder went to Columbia, South Carolina, and I'm telling you, it rained the whole way so hard that you couldn't hardly see. Matter of fact, I was driving the van, and a lot of the backseat drivers was wanting me to turn on more wipers because they didn't seem to think I had enough on. But it really rained hard, and we was playing on a grass field. Naturally, over there, it's sand-based, you know, sort of. It on our sidelines, well, their sidelines as well, but on our sidelines, it was a muddy, muddy mess. And I know that the RVA, they played Detroit, and the same thing happened with them. It was a muddy, muddy mess. I talked to both team owners, and they said that you couldn't hardly see the lines on the sidelines for where the mud and stuff was and how much it had rained. So hopefully there is some games this weekend. I'll get to that in a few minutes. As far as in the WNFC, the USWFL is taking all this weekend off for Easter. The NASCAR race is in town here in Bristol, so I think we're going to try to go for Sunday night. Watch it. They piled in the dirt and made it a dirt track, and it's a night race for this. So we've never been to night race on dirt, so I believe we're going to, if it ain't pouring rain, then we're going to check it out. So, but next week, that being the 15th, all the teams but one are back in full swing of getting started for week two. So it's football time here. I'm telling you, the weather's getting perfect. After it rained all that, it turned out to be a pretty nice day. So, you know, we're looking forward to it. I know for a lot of teams, the season didn't start out like you hoped it would. You know, they say the best, you get better between week one and week two of any other week. And I'm going to say this. I can't speak for anybody else, but I can speak for the Thunder. And I can assure you this, they better get a lot better between week one and week two, because the showing wasn't really that great for me. There was lots and lots of mistakes. You know, just, I don't know. I just wasn't happy. There was a lot of girls played their hearts out, did all they could, I guess. But we just weren't too good, I'll just be honest with you. We made lots of mistakes. And we're going to get them corrected at least as much as we can this weekend. And We got to travel back to Columbia next weekend on the 15th to officially start the Iron Woman season off. We played in a jamboree last week, playing Huntsville two quarters and the South Carolina two quarters, and then Huntsville and South Carolina played two quarters. So there's lots to play for, no doubt. It was a great time. That was really fun. We need to do that every year for these teams. Try to find a centrally located place and have that jamboree. It was really fun, and the girls really enjoyed it. And it sort of brings you back to the old days when I was in high school. You know, so we played in the jamborees, and what we did when I was in school, one of the coolest things was there was in their conference there, maybe 10, I can't remember, but anyway, the half of them was county schools and half of them were city schools, and they paired all the county schools up against all the city schools, and everybody played just a quarter, and whoever you drew, like, you know, for us, the Sullivan East team, we drew Tennessee High, and we played them for a quarter, and that was the only quarter we played and the only quarter they played. But what made it unique was all the county schools, whoever had the ball, when their quarter ran out, if they had the ball, then the next county school took that ball exactly where they left it, with exactly what down they left it. If it was 4th and 10, they took over 4th and 10 from wherever the ball was, and they kept a continuous score. And it was really, really fun because, the team that I played on, we were never really good, but Tennessee High was always our biggest rival, and I don't know how we drew them, but we did. And the team that left us the ball on about the 15 or 20 going in to score, and we scored and held them scoreless for a quarter. So, you know, everybody blew that all out for us, and like, you know, here it was, first game of the season, and we done beat Tennessee High, our biggest rival, beat them in a game, which wasn't nowhere near the truth. Nobody understands exactly what went on. I mean, we were fortunate to get the ball at the that close to scoring, you know, but we did hold them out from scoring for a quarter, so it was pretty good. But that was really, really fun to do that. And we might try to, you know, figure something out next year for that. Besides, it's just awful. You know, I wanted, like this weekend, it was worth the teams to travel because they each got to play two quarters, which actually meant they played a full game. You know, with them women's football, you got a lot of traveling going on. So just playing a quarter is not worth everybody traveling. So we might have to critique it, figure out something. But I'm just telling you, it was a lot of fun. And if you can, you know, figure it out, and like I said, all the county schools are on the same team basically, and all the city schools. So, you know, it would be fun if you had it in a North and South division and they were all on the same side and take it over where each place ended. So, I just know that was really cool when I was in school, and that was actually the only second jamboree that I'd ever played in. The first one, they didn't do that. You just played a quarter. So really, really fun. Like I said, the girls really enjoyed it. Both, all three teams seemed to enjoy it. The weather could have been a lot better. South Carolina, they got a lot of work to do as far as hosting things. I'm not going to say they did the best they could, but there was lots of things that were really, really good and lots of things that weren't. So lots of work to do, no doubt about that. But it was fun nevertheless. And I want to talk about some scores here from last week. And as a matter of fact, we'll kick off with the jamboree. In the first two quarters, the Thunder beat South Carolina 8-6. In the next two quarters, Huntsville beat the Thunder 6-0. And in the next two quarters, Huntsville beat the South Carolina team 28-0. South Carolina they were shorthanded. Huntsville didn't have but about 12, I think, themselves. But I'm going to tell you something. They showed up to play. No doubt about it. They won the Jamboree hands down. They come ready to play, you know, and you never know how your team's going to respond till you get hit in the mouth, and we got hit in the mouth. Now, I ain't gonna make no excuses. We played on our side of the 40 the whole two quarters. You know, we took the ball and was driving, and, you know, lots of unfortunate things happened. Like, for instance, they didn't have the chains out there, and the refs, you know, they could only mark their foot for a first down. So I really couldn't tell if it was first down. Really didn't have the chains. I felt like we got hosed on several of those things. But nevertheless, we shouldn't have been in that situation. But we were. And, you know, they did. They smacked us in the mouth. They got after us the whole two quarters. But one thing for sure is we, no ifs, ands, or buts, we played on our side of the 40 for two straight quarters. We never got past the 50, and they took over the ball at the 40 or less every time. And two quarters, and we only give up 6 points. So they gained a lot of those yards on penalties. They had a lot to rest, but they weren't too good, in my opinion. And some of the stuff they let get by with, and then some of the stuff they called was just absurd, really. And you know, but nevertheless, that's not what beat us, and I'm not making any excuses for that. We didn't rise to the occasion and play like we should have. They got after us, and I'm not sure that we were ready for that. You know, not saying South Carolina didn't get after us, but South Carolina made lots and lots of mistakes, and we didn't take advantage of that either. I mean, we had the ball inside their 10, I think, three times, and only come away with one touchdown. So I'm not happy about that. We should have put more points on the board. As a matter of fact, we threw an interception with about 2 minutes or less to go in the end zone, and they returned it back about to the 20 or 30. And then a couple of plays later, they throw a bomb and score. So they come 1-8, come back and tie in the game and potentially beating us. So I'm not happy about that neither. We played pretty good, and then, you know, that's what happens when you let your foot off the gas, your attention span's not what it should. You think you're going to win. I just told Mike, we're standing there, I said, well, you know what, if we don't make any mistakes, we're going to win this thing, and I'll be dang if we didn't make two mistakes in the next four plays, and it dang near cost us. So we got tons of work to do. And from all the teams that I talked to that took a loss, they've got a ton of work to do. You know, even the teams that won, I'm sure they didn't say, but I'm sure they realize they're going to probably have a lot of work to do. So, It's nowhere near the end of the season for anybody. It's just getting started. You got a chance to rebound and come back. And, you know, this Jamboree, actually, like I said, it's an eye-opener. I'll just tell you right now, we didn't have near as many girls ready to play as I thought we did. Now, we had some that really, really balled out, played really good, and some that didn't. That's going to have to rise to the occasion. We lost three, but we had two girls with the broke fingers and one girl with the broke hand, and I don't know where that leaves us. I know the two with the broke fingers have to have surgery. Not sure how long they're going to be out, but I'm not sure if the one with the broke hand is out or not. She's in a brace, I know that. So it was really, really physical game. No ifs, ands, or buts. Both segments, well, all three segments, was really, really physical. The South Carolina team gave up a lot of points to Huntsville on turnovers, which they turned into points, and we did not. When we got, throughout the day, we ended up with like seven total turnovers and didn't turn it into but 6 points. So
what that tell you? You ain't going to beat very many people doing that. And but Huntsville, every turnover they got, they turned into points. But, well, one we give to them, they didn't, and we held them out. But they sure did against South Carolina. And I'm going to tell you something. You get that many turnovers, and you don't do nothing with it in the course of four quarters, then you're in trouble. I'll just tell you right now, you're gonna be looking down the barrel of a loaded gun if you can't do anything with them. So we're going to the drawing board Saturday, and we're gonna figure out what we got, who wants to play and who don't, who wants to stand in there and get hit, and who don't want to get hit. Listen, it's football. If you think you ain't gonna get hit, you're sadly mistaken. And if you don't want to get hit or hit somebody, you're in the wrong sport. I talked to a guy just today that played college football and actually had a tryout for the Cowboys. And, you know, he's like, man, I'll tell you what, I hated running, but I'll tell you something. If I'd run an extra 20 yards just to get to hit somebody, I said, hey, I'm with you. You know, and I don't understand that most of these girls, they want to shy away from it. Getting hit hurts way worse than delivering a hit. So we're going to find out in the next week and the next 2 weeks, actually. Well, probably, you know, about 3 weeks. We're going to find out just exactly who wants to be a player on the Thunder. And when I mean a player, I mean somebody's really willing to step up and do their role 100% and stand in there and deliver them blows and take them blows. You know, football is a game of inches. And, you know, it ain't just the Thunder, and I don't want to just think I'm just harping on them, but I watched a lot of football this weekend. And the successful teams, when they're running the football, their running backs fall forward. The teams that weren't successful, their running backs are turning their back and getting hit in the back. And now, let me just tell you something. If you want to deliver a blow, you square up on somebody and you lower them shoulder pads and you run through them. That's how you deliver a blow. If you want to take one, you just turn your back and let them hit you in the back. Well, secondly, you turn your back when you're running the football, and you get hit, you're falling the wrong way. You know, it's thing, I guess, where women don't play when they're young. And, you know, it's hard habits to break. I'll just tell you right now. But, you know, it's always fall forward, you know, not sideways, not your back turned, it's fall forward. And the teams that I've seen this weekend that ran the ball really, really well, I watched their running backs. They were running downhill behind their pads the whole game. I mean, when they delivered a hit, they was rolling somebody up, or they was landing on top of them, or they at least landing forward. That means a lot. I'm just here to tell you. So, nevertheless, lots of work to do. Not happy at all. As a whole, we, you know, brand new, got lots and lots of new girls, lots of young girls. So it's going to be a process. But again, it's just April. The championship game is not to July. There's nobody locked in to play in that game yet. There's a long way to go. So, you know, that's why you practice. That's why you play, to get better. But you got to realize what happened and be willing to get better. So, nevertheless, my soapbox on the what happened with the Thunder this weekend. The rest of the scores, the Detroit Prowl, they traveled to RVA Tomahawks and got beat 10-0. If I'm not mistaken, the points was all scored in the first half. So they held them scoreless in the second half. Cincinnati traveled to the Michigan Queens and won 6-0. From what I heard, that was a defensive battle for almost the whole game. And then the Cincinnati team returned a punt deep into the Michigan Queens territory and ended up finally punching it in for a 6-0 score. So That's how that went. The WNFC. I know we watched part of this game. Not sure how we watched it or when, but we did watch it. I can't remember. But Atlanta Phoenix, they mauled the Tennessee Trojans 60-0. We did watch a little bit of that. I think we were eating supper, if I'm not mistaken. Lots and lots of work to do for the Tennessee. I'm not sure. That's a lot to overcome right there. I know Atlanta Phoenix is pretty good. They've been good for several years. So, matter of fact, I'll give you the power rankings here in a little bit and tell you just exactly how good some people think they are. Then the Florida Avengers had to travel to the Kansas City Glory. Got beat 40-0. We know a lot of players on the Kansas City team now, and they're lots of them are the real deal. Some of them that I know on there, I don't know a whole lot about, but some of the players that they've got are really, really good, and I'm sure over the next few weeks they're going to get tested and play some of these other teams and see exactly where they are. I know that wouldn't be a game. I know a lot of the Florida Avenger players, lots of good players, lots of good people down there, class. I mean, between the Kansas City Glory and the Florida Avengers, they're two separate kind of teams out there. So they took it on the chin and traveled to Kansas City to do it. That's tough on top of that. From Jacksonville, Florida to Kansas City, that's really tough. Then the Houston Mambas, new team in WNFC, beat the Denver Bandits 10-0, which I think Denver Bandits has one of the coolest names in all women's football. That, to me, I tell Jim for every day, I said, that's a cool football name right there, the Denver Bandits. But 10-0, that's pretty close game. Then the Washington Prodigy, they beat Philadelphia Phantom 31-0. This was surprising to me, and we watched a little bit of it. But the Texas Elite Spartans only beat the Mississippi Panthers 35-12. And at one time, the Mississippi team had a 6-0 lead, I believe, maybe, or was it 8-6? I don't know. I know it was really, really tight there for a while. So I was sort of surprised at that. Jennifer told me she wasn't, but I was. But I do know that the Panthers picked up a really, really good defensive back that used to play for the Birmingham team. I can't remember what the name, Alabama Fire. She's really good. They picked her up, and I'm sure that was a help as well. Close game here. Finally getting into a close game. As a matter of fact, the Denver game was pretty close. Houston only beat them 10-0. But the Seattle Majestics beat the Oregon Ravens 12-7. That's a really close game, a one possession game. Utah Falcons beat the San Diego Rebellion 14-8. That's a one possession game. Then the Las Vegas Silver Stars beat the LA Legends 13-8. And that's a one-possession game. So, you know, when you look across through here at all the scores I've talked about, not just in the WNFC, sort of had four blowouts over all the games. The rest of the games were within about a two-possession of being really, well, being, I mean, the other teams only won by two possessions or less, so. You know, I think when I read these power rankings for both teams, I think you're going to understand why that's where they're at. I mean, there's some of these teams that, you know, I don't think are going to stand out unless they play each other. But, you know, they're, for the most part, you had, let's see, 13 total games that I talked about, and eight of them, so well over half of them, were really, really competitive. And that tells me that the parity is where it needs to be. I ain't say where it needs to be, but where I like to see it anyway. I like parity. I like to see competitive games. I don't think nobody wants to see 60-0 blowout unless you're the one giving the blowout. But if you got fans, I mean, they like it. But you know what? I mean, that really gets old. You want to see competitive games. You want to see up and down the field. And I mean, I know you want to see your team win out in the end, but you want to see something competitive. You don't want to see a blowout every week. And then, you know, when you never get challenged or anything like that. So 8 out of the 13 games was, like I said, 2 scores or less. And that's, you know, that's pretty good. And 3, let's see, 1, 2, 3. Well, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of them were one possession or less. So 1 scores or less. So really there was a lot of, there was only 2 games or 4 or 5 games that were really blowouts. So they were really 1 score less. So that's really, really good for the parity and that kind of stuff for these teams to be within a 1 score at playing. And I think that makes for better football. It makes for better watching. The teams, I think, can grow from that. You know, you take how do you as the Tennessee Trojans? I know they're a brand new organization. They've got a few players with experience from other teams, a few players that have actually played in the WNFC before on some of those teams. But they're a brand new organization. They open up with the Atlanta Phoenix, which is arguably one of the best teams in the WNFC. How do they rebound from a 60-0 thrashing? And when I the few plays that I watched, it just wasn't even close. I mean, you're talking about look like you know, a Division 6A football team against a Division 1 football team, and I don't know how you rebound from that. I mean, I'm sure you made a lot of mistakes. The team made a lot of mistakes. I'm sure the coaches feel like they could have did a lot of stuff different and probably will. But listen, when you're getting beat that bad, in the end, you don't have the personnel to rise up there and just do a whole lot. And I'm speaking for the team that I coach as well. I mean, you might have players, but they don't fit the profile for where you need them to play. And I'm just telling you, you got to, man, you gotta get real creative and hope a lot of things change and hope the light goes off for a lot of them. You know, I'm one of those people that I worry about this year, not next year. We'll worry about next year come next year, you know, and a lot of times that's not a popular subject, but I'm a win now kind of person. I mean, I know you gotta be good for the long haul, but you know, winning every year make you good for the long haul. I don't make excuses. I want to make plays, and we gotta step up. And you know, I'm sure these coaches are looking at it the same way. But for a team like that, new team, new organization, you played at home, and you got thrashed 60-0. I'm telling you, that's a hard rebound right there. You know, the same thing for the Avengers. They got 40-0, and they was on the road, but they've been playing in the WNFC for several years. So, you know, where does that leave these teams? I mean, do they, you know, I see during the offseason, I see all these big name teams, the Texas Elite Spartans, the Kansas City Glory, the Houston Mambas, the Mississippi Panthers, and all them, I see them making big moves, picking up, you know, these players left and right. Where does that leave these teams that I'm talking about? Or what's their way of thinking? I mean, I'm wondering how the hell you get them? How do you keep them? What's the process to get those kind of players? What would be free agency or, you know, on the shopping block or whatever? How would you How do you go about recruiting those players, get them to come? I mean, I know when you're the Texas Elite Spartans, you're the best team in women's football. I'm sure everybody wants to go there and play, no doubt about it. But these other teams are not. They haven't won championships, not in this WNFC at least. So I see these teams recruiting all these players left and right. I'm just wondering, where does that leave these other teams that are at the bottom of the list? And I'm getting ready to read you this list here in just a second. So we'll talk about that. I know the Denver Bandits was they were undefeated last year for a long time, and here they done took a loss. I know it's early, and I know you'd rather lose early as late, but they done took a loss early, and they were arguably the team to beat in the playoffs. I mean, Utah sneaked in there and beat them, and that was an upset. I remember that from last year. So, you know, where does that leave these teams, man? That's what I, you know, where women's football as a whole is, you know, you got these top feeder teams that just keep reloading and reloading and reloading. And, you know, I guarantee you at the end of the year, when I read these scores like I just did, it's going to be the same teams blowing out different teams, but the end result is going to be the same. So these top feeder teams, man, they're doing it. I don't know exactly how, and don't understand where you get them all, how you keep them, and none of that, but I'd sure like to figure it out. So let's read these power rankings right here real quick. I don't know who ranked these power rankings. I don't know where they come from. So if it's not me, first and foremost, let me get that straight. This comes straight from the WNFC website or whatever. So at number one, no surprise, the Texas Elite Spartans are number one. I am sort of surprised that the Atlanta Phoenix is ranked at number two. Now, I know they've been good for a really, really long time. No doubt. Ever since I was introduced to women's football when Jennifer played for the Tennessee Train, they were really good then, and they've been really good for a long time. But as far as I know, at least since I've known, they've never won a championship. They're in the playoffs about every year. But, you know, beating up on a new organization, new team and all that, 60 to nothing. I mean, you got to do something to put up 60. I get it. Don't get me wrong. But no true reading of where they're at. I know they're good, so maybe somebody knows more than me. Atlanta Phoenix, number two. Kansas City Glory are tied at number three with the Utah Falcons. Now for me, now I'm just going to say this. Of course, Atlanta did go on the road and win. They traveled to Nashville, actually Clarksville, I believe, and they played the Trojans. So they did go on the road, and they put up 60. Kansas City played at home, but they did play a team that's been in the WNFC for I believe 3 years. And if that's the case, they're tied at number three with the Utah Falcons. Utah Falcons, I think, have a new head coach. I know last year the coach said that he was retiring. They won 14-8 over the San Diego Rebellion. So to me, you know, where does that make? I guess they're saying that the Rebellion are better than, you know, that was a really, really close game. But listen, I just don't see. I guess my point is, I would think Kansas City Glory would have got the nod over the Falcons for the number two spot, but they didn't. Anyway, they're tied at third with Kansas City, one of the third teams. One at number three teams, and the Utah Falcons are at number three. And then we have the Washington Prodigy, which, again, you know, the Prodigy's been good for years. They won several championships in the USWFL in the Division II. since they've joined the WNFC, I think last year is the first time they've made the playoffs. I believe they've been 4-2 every year. But they played a Philadelphia team that if they've won any games, it's not been very many, and they won 31-0. So my point is, you got the Houston Mambas, that the Denver Bandits, 10-0. Denver was one of the best teams in the league all of last year, and I believe their only loss come in the not in the championship, but in the playoffs. And you got the Prodigy over the Houston Mambas. So I'm not sure how all that come into effect. I don't know. These people know their teams way more than I do, and I'm not trying to second guess them. We're just having a conversation and just wondering, you know, how this comes about. So then the Houston Mambas are at number 6. And then the Las Vegas Silver Stars, they come in tied at number 7, which they won 13-8 over the L.A. Legends. And they're tied with the Mississippi Panthers for number 7, which got beat by the Texas Elite Spartans. So then at number 9, we have the San Diego Rebellion. Okay, 10, looking back over my notes here. So we got two teams that took losses that are ranked 7, tied for 7, and an 8 ranked team that took two losses over a team that took a win. Now, I don't know these teams, so I'm not trying to second guess these people. I'm just trying to figure it all out. But it would seem like to me, no matter how good the team's playing, a win would count for something, is all I'm trying to get at. So nevertheless, you got an 0-1 Mississippi Panthers team tied for number 7 with the 1-0 Las Vegas Silver Stars, and then an 0-1 San Diego Rebellion at number 8, or number 9, I'm sorry. And then at number 10, you have a 1-0 Seattle Majestic. And then you have number 11, 0-1 Denver Bandits, which I would think, you know, they would be right there at the top of the leaderboard for the 0-1 teams, if I was guessing. So, you know, but again, I'm not trying to second guess what they probably know way better, way more than me. But just talking, I did see them play last year. Don't know nothing about them this year. I do know their best side in is out, so that's probably hurting them really bad. So then at number 12, you have the L.A. Legends, which they got beat by the Silver Stars 13-8. Yes. And then at number 13, you have the Oregon Ravens, which got beat by the Seattle Majestic 12-7. I'm sorry. I'm wrong. And then you got the Philadelphia Phantom, which got beat by the Prodigy 31-0. They're at 14, and then the Florida Avengers are 15, and they traveled to Kansas City and got blew out 40-0. And then 16, you got the Tennessee Trojans, which they got just pounded by the Atlanta Phoenix. So, I mean, I know we know power rankings don't mean anything, but, you know, we just it means something, something along the way. You got to figure out who's sort of playing good, who ain't. I'm sure this is going to change. We'll try to keep up with it every week. This will probably change I'm guessing from the second to the middle of it. I don't think the bottom part of it's going to change at all. It may change just a very little bit, but I don't think it's going to change a whole lot. And I'll tell you here in a minute why I think it might change a little bit. in the USWFL, the power rankings, at number one, the RVA Tomahawks. They come in at number one. I think right now they're the cream of the crop. They hosted the Detroit Prowl and won 10-0. Second at number two, I think this is a real surprise to and maybe even myself before the season started, but the Huntsville Tigers, they come in at number two. I think, in a jamboree, they come over and took care of two teams. And not only did they take care of them, I mean, they beat one up in two quarters, 28-0, and held the other team on their side of the 40 for two straight quarters. They only managed to score 6 points, but it was a brawl. So the Huntsville Tigers come in at number two. I think that if you'd asked somebody before the season started if they would have thought that was possible, I believe everybody, but maybe the Huntsville Tigers would have said just crazy. Then at number three, we've got the Cincinnati Sizzle. They went on the road and won a tough one. Hey, you know what? You got out a win. You know, it's one of those games, just imagine, I don't know at what point they returned a punt. Deep in the into the Michigan territory, but they did. I mean, you got a scoreless game for some at least three quarters. I don't know how far into the fourth quarter it was. So, you know, it's a grind out kind of game, and then to get on in and get the 6 points after you probably haven't did a whole lot offensively the whole game. So, you know, congratulations to them winning a tough game on the road, man. Who knows, you know, what kind of environment up there. You know, you travel, and you don't travel with very many people with you, so probably a good tough place to play. Then at number four, the Detroit Prowl. You know, I probably get a lot of flack over this, but, you know, I think that RVA is at this point, I think no doubt that they're the cream of the crop. And you know, to from what I hear, it was a 8-point game and give up a safety of how they come up with 10. They held them scoreless, being Detroit held RBA scoreless in the second half. First contact RBA's really had, they had, or not RBA, well, RBA too, yes. I don't think they had a scrimmage either, but first contact the Prowls really had in live action. Yeah, I think that Detroit Prowl comes in at number four. I think arguably so. They're real tough in a tough on-the-road environment. Two possession game to win that. Then at number five, the Thunder, Tennessee Thunder, simply because they got one, two quarters. Don't know a whole lot about them yet. I'll tell you, and I see them every week and coach them. I still don't know a whole lot about them. I'm still, the jury's out on them. I'm still looking for somebody just to blow me away and wow me. So, yeah, we're in the bottom half. I know I've already got flack from some people about it, but, hey, it is what it is. You know, you don't like it, don't lose. Rise to the occasion and win. At number six, the Michigan Queens. I think that could be, you know what, Michigan could be just as easily 3-6 is not, as you know. For me, you got to put a little bit of emphasis on some kind of win, and I think they're right there, and I believe they'll probably, before it's over, move up that board. And at number seven, we got the South Carolina Scorpions. They're really shorthanded right now. They've got themselves in a pretty good hole. With players over there, I don't know what's going on, but they got some really good players, no doubt about it. Got to get more of them and got to get those there ready to practice. I had a good long conversation with their coach before we started the jamboree. Really nice guy. I think he really does as good a job as he possibly can with what he has to do with. You know, that you can only, man, it's not like college when you can recruit, and the pros where you can draft and trade and sign anybody you want and all that. You're just
glad to have bodies and girls that show up and this, that, and other. So they need the time. It's time for them to rise to the occasion and do something. I mean, they're, you know, I want to see everybody do good. And, you know, you got to get out there and beat the bushes. I know this week, you know, we lost, not to make any excuses, but we went over there, and I mean, that we had more players than anybody else, but that's not what I'm talking about. We went without two girls that really, that would be starters. One's mom had died like a day or two before, and one had a major surgery and couldn't make it, and I don't know how long either one of them was going to be out. You know, the girl with the major surgery, probably at least to the end of the month, maybe longer. And the girl that lost her mama, they were really tight. She's taking it really, really hard. I don't know how long she's going to be out. Then we had a girl that just joined back. She broke her hand. Not sure her status for like I say, the next game. Two girls with broken fingers that have to have surgery. Or may one of them may already had. I know one's having it on Monday. Their recovery is a month or so. Listen, man, that's football. That's what I say. You got, you know, that's five players right there. You know that I just don't know what the exact status is on. So you know we're beating the bushes as well as everybody else trying to find some people that can rise up and help this team. And you know, that's what it's about, and that's what, you know, everybody's going to have to do. You know, if we were fortunate to have, I think, 19 or 20, whatever it was, on the roster, and, you know, here we lose five at least for a while, you know, so we're right down there to the nitty-gritty. You go to play another game and lose four or five, and then there you look. And it can happen just as easily. I mean, I've never seen a game where you had two players break a finger and one break a hand. I mean, I've seen lots of injuries, but you know, nothing of that nature. So it can happen just that fast. You know, it doesn't matter. That's the kind of stuff that you can't protect yourself from. You can't practice against and all that. It's stuff that just happens, you know. So there's these teams gonna have to beat the bushes and try to find them some bodies. And I'll tell you right now, the Thunder has. They've been on the trail of trying to reel in some new, not necessarily new girls, but girls that have played that can help them out along the way. So it's going to be a tough season. You know, it's like a marathon race. Instead of, you know, that's what I say about these power rankings. It doesn't matter right now. It's just week one. The object is who's going to be there at week, at the last week. You know, when the sixth game comes, who's going to be at the number one, and after that, and so on. That's what matters. This is not a sprint. It's a marathon, and you got to be prepared for that marathon. You got to be have the players. You know, that I think that's where these teams that I mentioned, that these top feeder teams, that's where they went out in the end. I mean, last year, and I'm not exaggerating, last year I watched the Texas Elite Spartans play several games. They had at least four running backs that could start for anybody. So you lose one, I mean, they just put another right in there and never missed a beat. You know, receivers the same way. They got the best quarterback in all women's football right now, going to the best receivers at the best line. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. And, you know, here they are getting these players, you know. So, and that's what's going to be key down the stretch is having enough depth when you get these key injuries. You know, somebody's going to be out for a month. Oh, okay, well, I got somebody that can fill in for them. And I think that's where these better teams are going to win out and be more successful, because they have people to fill in for them. So we'll see. And, you know, that's why when we had conversation with these teams before the year ever started, you know, I'm telling them, hey, you need to load up on as many players as you can get. You need to get them. You need to get them. I know you only need this amount, blah, blah, blah. Stuff can happen, you know. And you just think if we had right now, if we only had 15 or 16 players on the roster, we got five that's out for I don't know how long. Some of them's going to be out. You're looking at, you know, barely making the start of a football game. So it's tough, and I think that's where those better teams are going to win out in the end. Like I said, the USWFL, they're taking off this week for Easter. But the WNFC does have four games going on this weekend. And the Kansas City Glory are no doubt going to get their second win. They're going to the Philadelphia Phantom. That's a long travel. Kansas City to Philadelphia. Kansas City's 1-0. They'll be 2-0. The Phantom's getting ready to be 0-2. I think they're gonna move down to 15th place in the power rankings, I believe, because the Trojans are 0-1, and the Florida Avengers are 0-1, and the Trojans travel to Florida. So one of those teams is going to get a win, and that's why I said earlier that in the power rankings that it would move a little bit on the bottom. I look for Florida to win that game. So I look for the Trojans to stay in 16th, and I look for Philadelphia to the Avengers to move. I look for Philadelphia to move into the 15th spot, and the Florida Avengers maybe to move 13 or 14. We'll see. I think they'll make a move there for sure. Then, you know, here's going to be a really good game. I think this is going to be I say it's going to be a good game. As far as on paper and the hype and all that, it's set up to be a good game. The Texas Elite Spartans are 1-0, and they're traveling to the Houston Mambas, and they're 1-0. You know, that's what these teams been, you know, I think the Houston team been setting their standards by what can we do against the Spartans. You know, the best team, and not just in our league, but in my opinion, in all of women's football. And, you know, where do we stack up against them? So that means that, you know, the top leaderboard, top side of that power rankings will move a little bit. One of these teams is going to be 1-1, and one's going to be 2-2 unless they end in a tie. So that's going to be a big tail across women's football and in their league. So I'm anxious to see what happens there. Definitely I'll have to tune in to that game. We should be done now. We can tune into that. And then you got the 1-0 Utah Falcons traveling to the 0-1 Oregon Ravens. I know nothing about Oregon. All I know about Utah is they've been good for a really, really long time. Don't know what kind of offense they're running now, but they run that triple threat stuff for a long, long time. But it's hard to prepare against. It's hard to prepare for. It's hard to stop. And, man, you got to have really smart players to run it. You know, just think how much practice you have to be doing to get that down. I think about that, you know, how easy it was when I was in school to learn all these plays and learn all this football, because we practiced every day, and we started every single day. We started with the same thing. You know, it was just repetition every day. I'm not trying to say we were any good. Everybody knows that where I played, we weren't any good. But at least, I mean, I can say I knew all the plays, knew everything, because it was repetition. We did it every day. But no more than we see, no more than I see, players, there's no way we can learn an offense like that, like the Utah team that used to run. I don't know what they're running now. I don't know who their head coach is or anything, but what they used to run, there's no way that a team that like we've got here, that no more than we practice, you could run an offense like that. So, man, that means they're putting in a lot of hard work, or at least they have put in a lot of hard work. And not only that, it's when I watched the Texas Elite Spartans play the other day, you know, I was like, man, don't get me wrong. I don't want nobody to think I'm saying this the wrong way. But because they got the best running backs and they're really good. But, man, some of the holes those girls were running through was just unbelievable, you know. And I'm like, wow, you know, how in the world, you know, are they getting these big holes? I mean, they're just ripping off yards left and right. Then you got those thoroughbreds back there to boot running through them. I mean, it's just gas city. So, you know, that means they practice a lot. I don't care what they're doing to get these players. That means they're making it work. You know, it's not just about having a bunch of all-star players. You know, I know, in basketball, it was a big thing back when I used to like the Lakers with Magic Johnson and James Worthy and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Michael Cooper and, you know, so on. Guess what? That old Kurt Rambis, the old trash man in there. I mean, he wasn't one of their best five players, but he was willing to do what everybody else and all those guys that I named wouldn't do. And sometimes you got to have those kind of guys. And so it ain't just about having all-stars. It's about knowing how to coach them, knowing about how to get them to work and how to get them to do all this stuff. And these teams, man, some of these teams, you know, there's no doubt why they're better than everybody else. They put in more work. And, you know, I'm not saying I'm happy for them because I'm usually not a fan of them, but I'm happy because they're in women's football. And, you know, when I try to get a point across to say, hey, you need to look at these teams. They're doing things that, you know, that make it right. Or they're doing the things to make it right. They're doing things that we should be doing. So it was really, really good to watch that, you know, to watch how these teams was preparing and what they were doing. So really, really good week of football there, ladies and gentlemen. I'm telling you, I'm looking forward to this week. Like I said, the practice for all the teams that are not playing, I'm sure. And if you're not practicing, you should be. You got to get better. There ain't no doubt about it. Practice is the only way. You don't get better playing games. You get better by practicing. So, ton of work to do. Ton of work to do. So, looking forward to it. Glad the season's kicked off. Can't wait to see how much these teams grow in this first week to this second week. I want to thank everybody again for tuning in. Thank BJ, JC Hawk Sport Network. Without her, wouldn't even be possible to host this podcast every Thursday night, talk about women's football and, you know, get the opportunity to have these coaches and players on here. If it wasn't for her, it wouldn't be possible. So I want to thank her and thank everybody for listening and tuning in. Till then, we'll see you next Thursday.